Carl Hiaasen is one of America's finest satirical novelists. His newspaper column is another side of the same talent, examining with a corrosive writer's eye the outrageous carnival of Florida and our world. His weekly Miami Herald columns are written with the same dark humor and satirical edge as his novels, Tourist Season, Striptease, Stormy Weather, and the rest of Hiaasen's acclaimed fiction. Each week, he proves that facts can indeed be stranger than the fiction they inspire. Since its inception in 1985, Hiaasen's Baseball Bat to the Forehead column has been enormously popular for its passionate conviction and willingness to confront powerful interests in pursuit of the public good. Well, Hiaasen has a new best-selling novel out entitled Razor Girl. We'll talk about that with him as he's our guest on this week's book show. This morning, we talk with Hiaasen about current events. I do want to talk to you about the election, of course, and I don't even know where to begin. But given what we're looking at right now and given Donald Trump and his association with the state of Florida, when did he come on your journalistic radar?
Well, as soon as he was in Palm Beach, he started making enemies. He bought this mansion in Mara-Mara, I forget the name of it. But anyway, he bought it. He bought this place, and it's in the commercial flight pattern of West Palm Beach International Airport. And so Trump decided he would sue the airport to have them change the flight patterns. So all you folks coming into Florida on JetBlue and Delta and American would have to fly around his mansions because we didn't want to make too much noise and wake Donald up early. Not surprising that lawsuit failed. Then he insisted on hoisting a gigantic, huge, enormous American flag, which is fine, but it was way bigger than – Palm Beach is a kind of a stuffy little wealthy enclave, as they say, down there. And they have a maximum size you can have on your American flag. So that becomes a battle. And his neighbor, you know, nobody's going to throw him a ticker tape parade down Worth Avenue. Let's put it that way in Palm Beach. So he was always making little fusses here and there, but it was always benign in the sense that, you know, he wasn't there full time, and it was just, you know, another rich guy who bought a mansion in Palm Beach. I mean, Rush Limbaugh's down there. You know, Florida has no income taxes, as you know, no state income taxes. So it attracts a lot of wealthy people who stay there just enough time to say that they're Florida residents. Now, I don't know if Trump does or not. He's not releasing his taxes. I don't know where he claims residency, but I'm guessing it would be New York, but who knows? Anyway, but he's been around, and he was just, you know, he is authentic New York character, of course, but he's also... We claim because of his antics in Florida that he's also a Floridian too,
as he did during the primary. And
oh yeah, yeah,
he wanted to be a Floridian, of course. You have written several, obviously many, many columns on him, and one you wrote fairly recently said maybe Trump really wants to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's the case?
I don't think he would be crushed to lose based on some of the things he said and based on some of his remarkably stupid remarks that he's made. He says things that only a person who wants to lose would say. You know, I mean, he doesn't drink apparently, and I find it amazing because he'll say something that like only your drunk uncle would say, but he says it, and he's stone sober when he says it. And he does it because it gets it jacks up whatever crowd he's talking to. He does it for the performance. He doesn't do it in the studio so much one on one with Wolf, but he'll go that extra yard and say something phenomenally boneheaded and cost himself thousands and thousands of votes. So my theory was that first of all, it would be a step down in his lifestyle. The salary is going to suck compared to what he's making now. His entertainment budget at the White House is, as I said, it wouldn't. He couldn't hire Tony Orlando, much less Tony Bennett, for the inaugural ball on what the president's entertainment allowance is by law. So, you know, I'm not sure his wife would dig, you know, all the state dinners. I mean, she's used to hanging out with really glamorous, beautiful people, and you got to do a lot of research before a state dinner. You got to learn some geography. You've got to memorize some names, and it's hard work being president. And I don't know that Trump's. I don't think he would be crushed to lose. This has been a branding crusade for him. You know, he'll never be forgotten, no matter what happens. And I don't see him being crushed or weeping like Jimmy Carter did after he lost. I don't see that happening.
Do you understand the appeal at all? I mean, as we tape this, there are polls that suggest it's a dead even race. Do you understand, and as a journalist and as a satirist and someone who looks at the human condition of how this happens?
I don't think anyone can analyze the magnitude of what Trump has done, and winning the primary process and beating all the establishment Republicans. No, I mean, I understand what it means to be playing to suckers. That is the oldest showman's game in the book. That's P.T. Barnum. And when you get up and say we're going to build a wall that you know damn well is never going to be built, and when you say you're going to round up 11 million people when you don't have the resources, the money, the time, the court system, nothing exists that would enable you to do that. But when you say that and you get a big rise out of a crowd and you have people chanting, build the wall, you just keep saying it. That's just being a showman. He knows damn well the wall is never going to be built. It's a joke. It's not feasible. It can't be done. No one's going to pay for it, least of all our government is going to pay for it. But doing that over and over again, I get. What's hard to fathom is the, and I don't want to use the word naivete, but the idea that there are people out there that really believe he can do all this, that people that don't understand the limits of executive authority at all, don't understand how Congress functions or the Supreme Court functions within the government, that think the president has all this power, the fact that there are that many ignoramuses out there is kind of terrifying. The fact that he stirred up anger about the middle class, being held back in this economic recovery and all. I understand that. I understand the disgruntlement. I understand people not being happy right now. But I also know that if you look at the how many jobs this country has gained since 2008, I mean, it's phenomenal, the consistent growth that's out there. And it hasn't caught up with a lot of people. But Trump's world, it's doomsday, it's Armageddon. The reality is it's not. You can go in any small town in this country and see that it's not. The idea that he's been able to sell this, that we're going to hell in a handbasket when we have the strongest economy, global economy by far of any developed nation, but the idea that he can promote him of all people as a champion for the middle class is a coup, is a public relations coup. Because if there's one guy who's never been middle class, it's Donald Trump.
So when you have somebody like Hillary Clinton, who he's running against, and polls tell us that more people, as of right now, more people trust Donald Trump than trust Hillary Clinton, what do you make of that phenomenon? And obviously, I mean, there are stated cases where she has lied. And
sure.
You look at it and you say, okay, well, so besides the argument or the argument you could have of how did we get to a point where these are the two best candidates we could come up with, but we still
that's the real point,
right? Then we still have to look and say, okay, but it's this candidate versus this candidate, and we then try to make her, I guess, look better, which you get into these shades of gray because you say, okay, but at least in many people's eyes, at least she's fit.
That's the difference. This is a really discouraging year for choices in politics, and so you have two of the least trusted people, and the likability ratings both pretty low. You've got this going on, and then I think as a citizen you have to ask yourself, but I've done this in the past elections too. You go for sort of the lesser of two evils approach. If you've got your children and you've got grandchildren, if you care about what's going to happen to this country and the planet and the world, you have to look at this sort of clinically and say, okay, which of these two characters is least likely to get us blown up, okay? Is least likely to get us involved in a nuclear war with North Korea, is least likely right. to say something so stupid to trigger all the madmen that are in power in the world right now from turning their sights on the United States. Which candidate is the least likely to do that? And that's what guides your vote, not that you're excited about Hillary Clinton or even Donald. You're just trying to say, who's going to do the least amount of damage? I mean, it's a sad comment, I admit, on politics, but that becomes the reality on election day when you walk in there. Because the one thing is, you don't know what he's going to do. He could do or say anything. He changes every day. He's intellectually lazy. He doesn't read very much. He doesn't study very much. I don't know what he would do if you put a map of the Middle East in front of him, if you even had to tell him it was the Middle East he was looking at. He is truly, he is incredibly lazy in that respect. He run his whole fuel and his all his machine is getting up in front of a crowd and getting people riled up. Well, after Election Day, you know, that doesn't matter anymore because now you really got to sit down with Putin and his bro Putin and deal with the guy who is, you know, a thug. So now what? I mean, these are things real world things that the grown-ups out there who go to vote have to think about. Not just, yeah, Trump's great. He's kicking everybody's ass. You know, what kind of, you know, aging frat boy philosophy is that you think that's going to save the country? Because it ain't.
As of right now, do you believe he could win?
As of right now, today, no. If the election were held today, no, he'd lose. And could he win? Anything is possible. What's going to come out between now and November regarding Hillary? How well or how badly is she going to do? I don't think it's a question of him getting more popular. I think it would be the only way he can win is if she gets less popular. Mm. I think this is the great irony, is that almost any other Democrat, starting with Biden, would be probably 10 points ahead solidly of Trump by now. And almost any other Republican besides Trump would be ahead of Hillary. But this is who we ended up with, and this is what we got to deal with. And no, I don't think – Florida, for instance, we all always every 4 years pray that it doesn't come down to Florida. I mean, ever since Gore versus Bush in 2000,
right.
we just dread the idea that we have anything to say about who's going to be president. We have any responsibility in the process. We feel very – lucky that we're still allowed to vote even after 2000. They're even letting us vote. It's like a bonus. So, but every 4 years we pray it comes down to Ohio or Pennsylvania or some other state. Let them screw up. And if the Russian hackers are listening to this show, I'd just like to ask, if you're going to hack into an election system and screw up the votes in November, would please, Ohio, go to Ohio, go to Pennsylvania. Don't pick on us. We are Florida will screw it up on it, so we don't need Russian hackers to mess it up.
And you could have had much more stake in it. You had both Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush running. Did their political fate surprise you at all?
Yeah, I was surprised by Jeb, not Marco so much. He just never showed up in the Senate. I mean, he's really kind of empty suit. But Jeb, I thought he would do way better than he did, because he does happen to be a smart guy. He is not on the big stage, as we saw, that effective, and he's not effective when there's a bully in the room. I was quite frankly shocked that he didn't do better. I wouldn't have, you know, I just would have thought he would have risen to the occasion and gotten a little tougher and gotten, you know, but he really, that surprised everybody. And it surprised the people that gave him $100 million before it even started. Surprised them too. But that was. Marco didn't surprise me at all. But, I mean, just watching him in action for the last few years, you know, his entire resume while in the Senate wouldn't fit on a toenail clipping. So he didn't bring much to the table.
Well, the name of the new novel is Razor Girl. It is now out from Knopf. Carl Hyacin, it's always a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me back.
Carl Hyacin is a columnist for the Miami Herald and a best-selling novelist. His latest is Razor Girl. It'll be the subject of this week's book show tomorrow afternoon at 3, Thursday evening at 8:30. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.